This is the Senate Criminal Law and Procedure Committee, Wednesday, April 7, 1971, 3 p.m., room 315 in the Capitol. Today's agenda, Senate Bills 253, 226, 343, and 655.
Are they acting? Is this the first time? Are they acting?
Well, not
We had a hearing on that.
Yeah. What this pointed out to me, somebody should make note of that this provides a conviction, but how about those charges being dismissed?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, big one.
Well, that's a good point, but I'm just wondering myself whether or not it would be a sense of mission for further study.
Well, in effect, it's deferring it, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right.
Is there some complication on this? Seems to me this has merit. I hate to pass sweep some under the rug unless there's a good reason for it.
Well, we don't have to do this today.
No, I didn't mean it that way. Well. I just quite willing to work for the chair on this, except that I just wondered what would they do in 2 years that they couldn't do in 2 hours?
Study it for
study.
I agree with Senator Hoyt. I vote to pass the bill now, but if there's not a majority who votes to pass the bill, then that's a different question.
Hey, I don't want to go off as half cocked, but I'm just curious to know if the complications that we can't solve in a fairly short time.
Well, let's get off of this bill then. Go on to the part
without a hearing. A little more time on this thing will be.
So I'll open the hearing on 326. There's no one here on the
Does anyone here? Wait. We've got so much bubbling down there.
326?
Could I say a few words about that?
Okay.
First, before I do, I'd like for the staff member to explain whether this bill has any effect in view of the good time provisions that are in Senate Bill 40. This is a bill to provide a good time will apply to a jail sentence of less than 30 days, because at present you would need to have been sentenced for more than 30 days before you get the time off for good behavior. So that a guy who's been sentenced for 25 days might serve longer than a guy who was sentenced for 31 days under the present law. Well, I've almost said it. There is no provision in present statute to allow a jail prisoner any time off for good behavior if his sentence was originally under 30 days. On the other hand, if his sentence was over 30 days, he can get good time. I don't know the reason for the distinction, and this was suggested to me by jail officials and by even one deputy DA talked about it. They couldn't figure out any reason why there could be any difference. If a man sentenced to 31 days, he gets time off for good behavior and will work for it. If he's sentenced to less than 30 days, he can't get any time off for good behavior under present Oregon statute. The people administering the jail in my area thought it would be a good idea to allow them good time, even though the sentence was not more than 30 days. There are a lot of fellows who are there for less than 30 days who they'd like to make trustees and have oyster cars and working conditions and things like that.
How much credit would he get if he was sentenced to jail for 1 day?
He wouldn't get any.
He wouldn't?
Well, you'd have to argue with 1/10 of a day. You get 1 day for each 10 days. I think as a practical matter, we wouldn't get any if he was sentenced to 1 day.
Well, I mean, shouldn't that be clarified here? What if it's for 5 days?
You'd get a half a day.
Well, I'm not sure the bill says that. I think your ideas are, but I think it should
fill it up, what if it's only 10 days?
About a tenth of a day for each, day. Wouldn't that be?
Well, you guys have more trouble legislating council than bills.
Well, I thought you did it. It's all right.
No, seriously, I think that's a funny question. Huh? Mm-hmm.
I think that, Mr. Chairman, I think the effective point is that if the 30-day causes trouble, I think you've done the same thing on 10 days. If your intent is not to grant us any good time under 10 days, and I think you're all right, but over, if you want to treat the guy that's got a 5-day, I don't know that you speak to the issue. You're right back to where you are with a 30-day. Yeah.
You started off asking a question of 1 day, and I think in a practical matter, they're going to release everybody at the same time in the afternoon, and not release one guy 2 hours early.
But if it's 5 days, I think it should be something in here, for example, if it's under 10 days, if they don't get any. Something. You can't compute it in one tenth of a day situation.
Part of the effect of it is, if you want to do it at under 10 days, you don't get it. And maybe that's just as fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really think that otherwise it's just a question of what time of day we release. Is it the morning or is it the afternoon? One day for each 10 days. It doesn't say no good time.
Well, why didn't you say that there will be no parts of days then? Which is in effect saying it has to be 10 days for you to do things again.
Well, that's the will of the committee.
No, but I think it's going to be interpreted
a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
I think when it's less than 10, since it's only 1 day for 10, it's just 2 minutes, you're going to let it out the same.
That question is going to come up.
What's the place of decision if it's only 10, you don't get it? That ends it right there. Mm-hmm.
That was the point that Mr. Pollack just made, and I think that language he used could be very well adopted along with the bill. And I
so if the word would go in and it would have to be amended, well, I would think on line 14 that amendment to upon a sentence is not less than 10, nor more than 30 days. 1 day for each 10 days.
I make that motion.
On sentence of not less than 10 or more than 30 days.
Nor more than 30.
On line 14. On favor of this amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. What's your will to make?
I'd move it out to the path of the members.
Then move it. Remove 2.6 out as amended. Amended 6. And,
question.
Question's been called for. Post Kirk and call the roll.
Senator Brown. Aye. Senator
Carson. Aye.
Senator Davis.
Aye.
Senator
Hart. Aye.
Senator Kirk.
Aye.
Thank you. Senator Fager, would you carry the bill?
Well, if Tony will promise not to ask me an embarrassing question.
I won't. I promise not to ask you a question.
No, I said embarrassing question.
Embarrassing question.
343. Robert Wright,
Bob Wright, Executive Assistant, Corrections Division, speaking on behalf of Mr. Amos Lee, Associate Administrator for the Corrections Division.
Mm-hmm.
Senate Bill 343
relates to credit for time served prior to time in managed receiving in penitentiary or correctional institution, and would delete the provision that has currently been in the statute since 1967. True that the process of determining the amount of time to be credited has been a serious paperwork burden, and we've had considerable difficulty getting timely reports from the county concerning the amount of time to be credited towards the service and man sentence. We've worked out most of the bugs in this process, however. We feel that it should be continued as it is in its existing form, and rather than reverting to the prior form or prior 1967. The proposed change would probably create the adverse morale factor within the institution. Some men spend considerable period of time in county jails before being sentenced. So it's our position that Senate Bill 343 should not be passed, and as an alternative to both Senate Bill 343 and the present statute, we feel that we have an ideal procedure which would require that judgment orders include and specify the number of days of allowance of credit for all time served. And PC entered on the judgment order and accompanies a man when he's delivered and received at the institution. We provided copies of our proposed amendment to the clerk, and I believe we have them. Relates to ORS 137, 310, 320, and 370. Should note one correction on our proposed amendment. That's in paragraph 1, or section 1 of.
Excuse me. Where is. I got it. I just want to catch up with you. I'm sorry. The back of this.
Paragraph, section 1 of ORS 320, the last sentence should be underlined, indicating that this is also new material. That is, that we should read time spent in custody following the entry of judgment prior to delivery of the correction provision shall be credited towards the term of sentence unless otherwise ordered by the court. Currently, in the state of Oregon, the responsibility to certify the amount of time served rests with the clerk of the court. In many instances, this information is not readily obtainable or accessible to the clerk of the court, but rather is in the hands of the sheriff who's been housing the man in detention. We feel it would be beneficial to the court, to the individual, and to corrections if those number of days were available to the judge at the time of sentencing and were actually entered on the judgment order.
Any questions?
All right, still got one. We have a bill here, and as I understand it, the amendments just do the opposite of what the bill asked for. I'm not going to ask whether it's humane or not, but I'd kind of like to know where the bill came from. Is there somebody here to talk for the bill? I'm not opposed. I have no argument with you, but I just don't understand it.
I don't know. I understand that the bill was sponsored by the Committee on Judiciary, and
at the request of the Judicial Council. So the Judicial Council is the one that's behind it.
There hadn't been any inquiry with us concerning the bill. I haven't known that I would be registered. Don, I called
according to the judicial council, the council agreed to prompt the Senate Bill 343 at the request of Judge Reed. Is that right? The purpose of the bill is to prevent defendants who know they are guilty from seeking continuous court moments of their trial.
I move that the college we have said the contestants were left time. So, I just mean you're important that way.
The present statute says that any time in custody must be considered. Isn't that the way it is?
Well, we just changed that. When? Last
year? 77.
67. Well, they used to rot in jail until they got around to getting to the big time and took it up. I'd be reluctant to go back to that old method.
So I understand that this wouldn't prevent the judge sentencing from considering that. This bill would not change, it would not prevent the judge from considering jail time. On the other hand, it would not require the corrections authority to give him, the prisoner, his jail time. As it is presently, when a prisoner gets to the corrections authority, he comes with a statement signed by the clerk of the number of days he was imprisoned prior to his delivery. And it has nothing to do with what for or why, but just simply is an accounting of how many days. So what is changed by the law would be, at present, you must, by this bill, I mean, at present, you must give him credit as a bookkeeping transaction for any time he was in jail, regardless of why he was in jail. And this would no longer make that mandatory. Is that a fair summary, or did I leave out now?
Prior to 1967, when, in effect, we had what this bill proposes to do, a man sentenced did not get credit for time served in terms of specific number of days unless the judge considered that in ordering the sentence. In other words, he took it into consideration, but it didn't come out as so many days. He was still sentenced for 3 years, or maybe he was considering sentencing 4 years, or maybe he was considering sentencing for 3.5 years. This allows for the specific number of days, our amendment would allow for the specific number of days credit for which the man was actually in confinement, solely for the purpose of the charge in which the judgment was ordered.
But now, under your proposed amendment to what we do to subsection 1 and section 1 of the bill, where you say that it's 100% legally allowed on the that just relates to falling into the judgment prior to delivery.
The
court couldn't otherwise order with respect to time spent prior to the
last line of subsection 1,
does apply after the man's sentence only prior to his delivery. Sometimes the man may stay in the county jail for a week, 2 days, 3 days, a month, or sometimes may be released to the custody of a U.S. Marshal and go and serve a 10-year sentence elsewhere in another jurisdiction. And unless it were specified, otherwise, then by the court, and the court would have it broadly, would relate to whether or not the sentence, as is now the case, whether or not the sentence is concurrent or consecutive. And if a man was detained on some charge other than this one, under our interpretation, he would not get the credit.
Is there another
inconsistency where a man appeals, he does not get credit, does he get the county jail, but he does get credit, he does get the prison, while the appeal is going on.
I read the statute that relates to whether or not he's out on under his own, he's initiated his absence from the penitentiary, right. He does not, under current statute, he's in county jail when he's been sentenced or hasn't been sentenced.
He's in county jail when he's appealed.
If he's in, under our amendment, if he's in the county jail, the sentence has been executed and entered into a judgment's been made. You didn't finish your sentence?
No.
I think he has it there, I'm not sure.
It's just 48 hours. So.
Currently, as long as my sentence, if a man has been sentenced and an entry of judgment has been made, and if he remains in the county jail pending an appeal under our provision in this amendment, he would get credit for the time unless it was otherwise ordered by the court.
Well, I think there is a jail in some place that while waiting for a appeal, you're going to the penitentiary. That's the commission. I thought it was pretty well done. Do you hear that?
Why is it that you
did
a appeal?
Maybe that Mr. Babcock, public defender, may speak more specifically to this aspect.
I think I'd like to take Mr. Babcock's testimony on the issues that I listed in the group and how I'm public.
Chairman and other members of the committee. Mr. Babcock, that particular statute that covered the situation where the person was allowed to stay in the county jail pending the appeal to the district council on the preparation of the appeal. And I would think that, going back to the old system, of course, that should be a contradiction of rights. This is a breach of the right you might have under that statute.
Wasn't that case that came out this year that said that he did not get credit
I think probably this is a case, I think it was Delaney, could have been, I think Delaney, this is a case which was pre-1967.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's the, we had that case. But I think that under the existing statutes, why it would be a conflict as far as exercising his right to stay in county jail. Consideration has to be given to that. There were a couple of other items, though, that I think that are important. These concessions with the experience our office has had with this problem. Prior to 1967, we were continually talking with inmates in the penitentiary. We had a terrible problem in the sense that we had to oftentimes go back and check what the record did say. No one remembered whether or not the judge gave us from the bench or he didn't. And we spent a considerable amount of money on transcripts, which really didn't involve a post-conviction proceeding, but just a clarification of what was said so that it would make it straight with the record. And of course, we prepared lunch for tongue quarters, and if the judge had made a statement from the bench, that he would be given credit. That was one of the primary reasons, I think, why this amendment was made in 1967. It was a real important one. And like I say, it involved a considerable amount of cost. Another problem we've had in our discussion and interviews with the inmates is that this is back to a fairness concept. We've had a difficult time trying to explain to the inmate that he's being held on a robbery charge and he's in jail and doesn't make a difference where he's being held. They have a hard time understanding why they don't get credit for it. It's just a straight fairness concept. I mean, I think it often, most of the cases, they weren't doing it for dilatory purposes. They were, a lot of the cases, they were there even a short period of time before they went to the penitentiary. And you get back to this aspect of bitterness or feeling that the law isn't fair, and you get to this implication of, if the law isn't fair, I'm going to cause trouble, this and that. We had a lot of guys before 1967 that spent an awful lot of time, Delaney being one of them, after Judge Holman on his appeal. He stayed back there, and Judge Holman fully advised him wouldn't be getting credit for it. They never left, stayed up in Clackamas County Jail. I think he was up there 2 years. I think Delaney probably was right. He maybe should have been given credit for it since he had that right under the statute. I think it'd be a terrible shame to go back to all the problems we had before the amendment was passed in 1967. I think we'd be going back and calling up these court reporters and having them check their notes to see what they said from the bench. So that's about the size of the law. I thought that was the right statute, maybe I didn't have the right statute.
Well, it doesn't sound very good to me,
the bill. Have you seen the amendments, Jim?
Yeah. I should have said something about that, though. Okay. I think it'd be a real fine idea for them to take care of this, because I'm not criticizing the county authorities, but oftentimes we're the ones that get the certificate. And we spend an awful lot of man hours getting hold of the jailer and trying to find out how much time he did spend. If it was in the judgment, and if they took care of the thing at the time the district attorney prepared the judgment order, it truly, I think, would eliminate a lot of paperwork. I know it eliminated a lot of problems for us. If they could, then the district attorney could call the jailer, and the jailer could say, look, he's been here. You might have a little bit of a problem in the sense that the judgment's preferred before he leaves the county jail. Maybe they could coordinate their activities. It would be nice if we didn't have to ask these jailers for these certificates. If you could incorporate some way into the judgment, it would be nice. Save us a lot of telephone calls and letters. That's about all I have to say.
So what is your proposal that the majority of the original language in the act and the act of the new
language? I think the proposed amendment from the first, I think that'd be good. I just, one point I want to make, I truly hope that the bill as it is, it doesn't pass.
I know that the original language be restored in Senate Bill 343 and that the amendment contained on the speech can be adopted.
This goes back to some language that isn't in the bill, doesn't it?
Those who practice in Wayne County may abstain.
Well, we're not correct. I hope you got it yet.
It's cute.
Subject to the Mr. Select will run over this language and say it if you
want.
Right. I know she's on your work, but then
Aye.
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 Aye. Good.
What was your name, Mr. Sinclair? I'm sure you. I know this is your name.
Bob Wright.
Wright?
Wright. Mr. Reed's executive. $10.655.
Is that going to be engrossed, by the way? I'm assuming it is.
Yes.
Say two questions on the floor. Okay.
Was Senator Mahoney notified?
$6.55.
It looks like a good bill to me. See, that's an egregious thing I've heard.
Let's call Senator Mahoney.
I was just a good deal before the call.
What happened to collector here, this convict works for 50 cents a day or 2 bits a day and maybe accumulates $300 and some collection agency comes in and garnishes his everything he has there to pay on some bill.
Didn't they used to have a, I think a friend of mine helped break that, didn't they used to have a rule that they wouldn't allow garnishment, and then somebody took them up on it, didn't they?
So.
Or something, and broke it.
Well, we have a present rule on garnishment, you only can't take the first $75 a week or something like that.
That's for wage earners. This is the prisoners that are working for these Chinese wages, you know. And some collection agency outside comes in and takes a little we have.
This is different than if he's working outside.
Oh, yeah, it'd be a separate one.
Well, this becomes an account. His money, as I understand it, goes into his own account where he can draw on for goodies and things. And once it leaves the range of wages.
There's going to be some testimony against that.
Well, let's go ahead and have each guy. It must be
you
want, one.
You want to hear from each other? Robert Wright, you need to follow the okay, and then I'll follow him. He wasn't on. Oh, yes, he was.
I'm worth calling from the penitentiary of the superintendent of human services. Got together with Bob and we kind of put up a presentation in regard to this. I would like to briefly cover a little bit of history in regard to this and bring you up to a point where we may have a satisfactory solution already developed. In the first place, in years gone by, we have experienced about 2 garnishments per month against inmates. And I would like to reflect some of the opinions we've heard from inmates themselves. In many cases, they say that I didn't even know I had the court action pending against me. Sometimes they make a statement that, doggone it, I don't owe that money. By virtue of their status as a prisoner or inmate of the penitentiary, their civil rights have been suspended. That's under ORS 137-240. So really, they are not in a position to defend themselves or to file any kind of counter suit. And it seems that it is kind of an unfair type of situation against an inmate. No, I'm not opposing the bill. I'm just trying to face the information in regards to it. I think perhaps as time goes on, it might be a little more clear what I'm trying to do. But we feel that we are opposed to an inmate being placed in this position. We don't think that it's a satisfactory situation where an inmate's account can be garnished in this manner. Again, because of his lack of knowledge of the suit against him and perhaps his inability to evolve the civil rights to actually pursue a defense against it. I would also like to state that I worked at the prison since 1963, and I have talked with the former warden Gladden about this many times. He was very much opposed to the garnishment of inmate accounts. And I talked only this morning with new superintendent Cup. He also feels very strongly against any such action against an inmate account in this manner. Now, I'd like to say this, Mr. Wright has, I believe, already distributed some information to the committee members. Federal court case came up late last fall, and as a result of this court case, the federal court, in conjunction with the Attorney General's office, has asked the division to develop a policy in regard to the handling of inmate garnishment, and Mr. Wright would like to present this information to you. Exactly what, and we have received instructions from the Attorney General's office to pursue this policy. The policy has been issued. And might I say this, that since the time the policy has been in effect, we have received only one garnishment against an inmate's account. We returned the garnishment to the jurisdiction which forwarded to us, stating that due to the recent court decision that we could not honor it, and that's the last we heard of it. So perhaps the problem has diminished drastically. As I said before, we were receiving, I think, about 2 months since this new policy has gone into effect. We had one which was we rejected and which was accepted as in the flight that Mr. Wright could prepared to explain the
document. Many persons that come to the penitentiary, the correctional institution, or the women's center have considerable indebtedness, which is legitimate. We feel it's to the advantage of our clients' rehabilitation if we encourage them to handle debts that they have, that their credit rating be good and that their debts be paid. And our policy addresses this matter, and the matter of garnishments and wiping out a man's account. Essentially, it's a buffer, and it provides that if a man has less than $100 in his account, that the funds are immune from garnishment. He has more than $100 in his account, he may be garnished. We've had an example of this at the correctional institution, wherein an inmate had less than $100. He recognized this. The staff explained to them the policy and the decision's position on it, and he felt that he should pay the debt, and he went ahead under the even though those funds were immune from garnishment, paid the debt, realizing that he could still, in serving time,
still earn money towards the eventual release. You have copies of the policy, and also I believe a copy of the letter from the Attorney General concerning garnishment action. This has been, our policy has been developed in consultation with the Attorney General's office and been reviewed by the federal court and considered to be acceptable to, by the inmates and by industry. Also in talking with Mr. Gary Badcock, the public defender, he's in support of this policy. So our position is, it would appear to us that the problems associated with garnishment have been taken care of in a reasonable manner by our policy. The bill is not necessary.
Any questions?
What legal authority do you have to adopt this policy? I can't cite the exact statute, however, the superintendents of the institution, by statutory mandate, have responsibility to safeguard funds towards an inmate's eventual release. And like I say, this matter has been totally reviewed by the Attorney General's office, the policy in total, and they felt that this was a very acceptable answer to the. So your policy is just to exempt $100. The policy also exempts, perhaps less to speak more specifically to it, 50% of the incentive award kinds of earnings. We differentiate between inmates earning wages and inmates receiving incentive awards. This is really what they are. It's not like a wage earner in the public. These men receive from 25 cents to $3 per day, depending on the quality and quantity of their work. But it would exempt 50% of the earnings that a man received during the month that the garnishment was received. And also recognizes some funds which are already immune from garnishment, such as VA kinds of pensions and so forth.
What if these were put in the account? The proceeds of a VA pension in your account, are they subject to garnishment?
If we can be identified, they are not subject to garnishment. There are a number of cases, workman's comp, cannot be garnished. If you can identify the funds, and in most cases, I mean, we can. We had garnishments come in where man had a sizable amount of money in his account, however, it was made up entirely of proceeds of some kind of a governmental payment that was not subject to garnishment. And this is, we didn't really return the garnishment with this statement that all funds are from this source and an acceptable explanation.
Any other questions? Thing that could happen.
And these fellows out here are trying to earn a little money, so they'll have something in their pocket when they go out. Take that money. I think it's, there isn't anything in English language in my book to describe that kind of conflict. I am not, no feeling against police meetings. I've even represented police meetings. And a reputable collection agency wouldn't take action like that. But there's a local outfit here that's doing it. And I've been told by collection agents, responsible ones in court, that they have nothing to the utmost contempt for any collection agent or any other person that would take from the pockets of one of these poor fellows who's going out on the street the little money he's earned out here, 50 cents or 6 cents a day, whatever it is. That's my theme. It's wrong. Now, I don't know, Don, what do you think? Do you think that this film goes too far?
Well, it certainly goes beyond the program they've worked out.
Well, do you think that this, for instance, are there any situations where men bring money or acquire money or funds in which the penitentiary institution is custodian? Other than wages. There are. I think the bill should be amended. To, after all, to, I didn't, that wasn't my intention. But as far as wages are concerned, why, aside the, from the humanity, I would think that the public policy of the state of Oregon is to see to it that any money that these people earn out here, that when they go out, to take it with them, so that they won't be tempted by that to hold up a service station a second week around. That's all I got to say. I don't think Bill needs any argument. It may need some amendments. So that's all I got. Any questions? How do you like my life?
Is that your new place?
Thanks. Don and Julie were preparing that bill for me and our chairman of the district committee. I know you've really done a better job. I have the legislative council, and they do a good job up there. They're against the way. If anybody's sitting here, I don't, first of all, I don't believe in funds out there for custodial leases. I don't think they're custodial leases. They're not from the jurisdiction of the court. But that's all I got to say.
John, can you fix this?
To make it consistent with what you're already doing. Maybe it'll be my intention if it's a bill is necessary.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to see an amendment prepared which would exempt all of their earnings under this incentive program, and that would have such language so that we wouldn't counteract any existing immunities of any other existing funds. It probably would not, I don't know that it ever happened, wouldn't permit them to bring $5,000 in from somewhere else and put it in and exempt it there. So in other words, I'd personally like to see amendment that would exempt their rather small earnings. I mean, we're not talking about my family, but we can get it all in a number of times. You know. I'd like
to. There is a thing you said you didn't use the bill, but you weighed in with the primary statutory authority.
That's true, too. I don't think you cited any statutory authority, so it might be challenged. The other thing, I think more than 100, if they have $300 standing there, I personally think they ought to be able to get that when they get out of jail. Just imagine if you're only earning $300 a month, whether they get or not earning, whether they get them $50 a month or not. $30 a day for $90, but you're talking about just a handful of people. I suppose only making $25 a day. And to have half of that go, it's small enough to start with, and then to half of that. So I'd like to see all of that.
His earnings by also by all regulations are split 1.5 cents in his savings account, which are not available to him. Four times a week, normally with a few exceptions. So grant for over 25% basis, he's still only getting 75% of that credit into an account that is usable and spendable by him or doing purpose.
But you have two points, don't you? They have a point that Senator Mahoney spoke to, and that is the money when he gets out. Senator Cook spoke to that. You have the point, the money while he's in. And you can't, by an internal rule, can't protect it. If it's garnishable, it's garnishable, and you can't protect it by, say, by setting up your own fund, your own bookkeeping. It seems to me it'd be hard pressed to make that binding on a creditor.
Well, in the past, prior to this regulation, all funds, whether they were in current or savings,
and you think that's all you need?
Well, when you put this way, the $100 figure, I think it could probably protect you against the statutory requirement for these money for you're required by law to see the man has $100 in his possession at the time he is doing parole or discharge. And whether the 100 is posted or not, the 100 is only mentioned by a small amount. Well, it's the
so what you're saying is that 100 really only protects the state. And after that, he doesn't make up for it if he's there.
The 100 does match the statutory requirements. Whether or not this is an adequate amount for a man to have when he needs it.
Yeah. I do want to come back up here and make it more official.
Well, I have this. Our experience with the policy thus far has been stated. It may be.
Yeah, you want statutory.
It may be that statutory authority to do this, we'd be happy to have it. However, I don't know how necessary it is. It's been our interpretation, and we've had the full support of the Attorney General's office thus far, as indicated in the material, in the letter, that referring the handling of garnishment to our policy, and they support our policy. And they have indicated they're prepared to defend it in the implementation of our policy. But we would have no objection to adding to Senator Mahoney's bill the provision that earnings should be immune.
Why not do $100? That's not run that line and come back to amend this bill.
Be happy to do so.
I think to me that the Attorney General might run for president or something. He may not have the same Attorney General in a couple of years.
He'd be happy to. You really wouldn't have any objection if we were to exempt all of the exemptions, would you?
Well, other than that, we feel that with indebtedness, the man has a responsibility. And perhaps Mr. Collins can give you an example. It could happen that a man comes to the institution with an account. Of course, we're talking about earnings that separates it out. But it could happen before our policy that a man can come to the institution with a fund of money that he may have gained by forgeries all over the state. And we would feel that we should repay those amounts. And if garnishments were necessary from those businesses, then we'd be supportive to that.
So that's not what we're talking about, huh?
I think you understand what the committee's asking, right?
I believe so.
All right, then why don't you prepare the necessary amendments to this bill and send it to us? We'll be adding and have another hearing on it.
Don, you prepare our amendments along the lines of that.
Right. Thank you.
Hey, Ken, I didn't mean to embarrass you.
Just a felony judgment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Class C felony. Just Class C felony. What you say?
I would like to take action on that.
Someone wants. I would.
Who's
that?
I'd rather go. You know, the people before the group has recommendation, the first call the rule.
You want to?
No, I didn't expect
Wally's okay.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Hi.
Hi. Would you like to carry that one?
Yeah.
You
carry it over on the house, eh? So you know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you probably don't know about it. It's a busy making speech. Do we want a table 362?
That's
all
in
fact. 362? Same as
HR2? Oh, no, right. Table.
I'll move the table 362. That's the one we had the hearing on. I think because we talked about this before.
Oh, yeah, we talked about
that. It's not out here.
Senator Carson moved to the table of Senate Bill 362, which is similar to
1802.
Any discussion? Not the first call the rule. I checked with the president who was interested in 363. We all, and Don has done some checking with the attorney general with some questions as to whether or not it's unconstitutional. The president asked me to have a table.
So moved.
The president moved to the table of Senate Bill 363 and discussed. First call the rule.
I really ought to ask them. See, I wouldn't have to vote on this. I really don't know what I'm doing except for 270, Mr. Chairman. That's good enough, I realize, but.
Well, we don't have to
do it. If it's an accommodation to the chair, I'd be pleased to vote yes, but I really don't know what I'm doing.
John asked me last night if we table it.
I can't take it that way.
It's unconstitutional.
I can't imagine how to be his sponsor or something.
I can't.
I'll go to that.
Turn to Senate Bill 205. Remember, we heard early in the game. Too early in the game to come up now, but then there was a certain amount of concern that it was not written properly. We've had correspondence from the State Board of Pharmacy, and they interpret the bill as properly written. I'll read it. I don't believe you all have copies of the letter from the State Board. I believe I understand SB 205 after further study and after conferring with the Board of Pharmacy members and the Board Council. I submit our interpretation of the bill by removing not more than one grain of codeine from ORS 474.080. Those preparations from human codeine would require a prescription as described in ORS 74060. So long as evidence indicates they possess addiction liability and they are subject to abuse. The drug preparation from human codeine in quantity that is not subject to abuse and which is subject to the condition for exemption in ORS 474080 could be exempted from requiring a prescription, but such a preparation would have to be classified or controlled within some section of ORS 474. We interpret that ORS 474.014 provides for such classification. The new section of 3 in this bill appears to provide that codeine be included for control regardless of the amount. In other words, any product in any codeine must be classified in some manner with ORS 474. The restriction prohibiting the board from removing the codeine preparation from such kind of control is very desirable.
Sir, last sentence again.
The restriction prohibiting the board from removing any codeine preparation from some kind of control is very desirable.
Well, would you like to go?
Yeah.
As is?
Yeah.
Was he the one that brought the first suggestion to us?
Yes.
We've got a bill on the same subject, but not quite this finer point in the human resources sector, like the dangerous drugs.
This bill prevents the board from removing
any coding products. As I take it from his letter, that they'll have some control. You'll have some control over it.
Right.
The thing is, that letter, it says, if we think if something's being abused, now that's it looks like it ought to be something more specific. Either it's dangerous or shouldn't be used, but to say it's being abused, be like eliminating prescriptions because they're being abused. And you have a sentence to that effect that
this one was more
involved. Yeah, it just got weird and weird and weird. And then they started arguing among themselves, being
right.
Unable what the bill meant.
There was
what
some stuff that you done stuff that would do the same thing as the suicidal column. Well, I'm trying to give the pharmacy board what they want or something like this. They know more about than we do.
It was requested by the board of pharmacy and the Howard.
Well, were we going to leave in paragraph 3 as well?
Yeah.
Just the way it is.
Yeah.
If you agree that they should be allowed to exempt a certain coding
But this really means they can let okay some patent medicines, and when a new label comes out, until the bums find out about it, under some other section, can't as long as they. I thought they gave them flexibility the way you're talking about it.
The ORS 474014 allows them to exempt any narcotics in the application of the narcotic drug act. If we find two things, or one of two things, possession, addiction, formation, addiction, sustained liability, the one that is of all the requirements of the narcotic drug act, or prevent recovery of a narcotic drug having sufficient addiction form or addiction sustained liability with such technical complexity and amount of yield that created a risk of improper use such as transport language. If neither of those things are present, then they may exempt it.
Well, that's right. Isn't that what that says? If some guy comes out with a new label on a cough syrup, and nobody finds out that they can use it for some illegal purpose, it would be okay until it was abused, and then they could turn around with it to act as restrictive, which you can't now do.
Well, only if it was being
coded. Yeah, I realize that.
On line 21, what's that hydrocodone?
Watered, you know, it's like watered coating, I don't know. But hydro is water.
Well, what's your question?
On the basis of that letter, they say they want it, you know what it says. I absolutely do that.
The North Moon 205 to the 402 pass, first call the rule.
Aye. 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 Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.
I know that some of these phone bills all the way to the
I'll pull that up. Let's turn to 717 and turn to the Carson bill and see what we'll like to see how we have some amendments, I believe. 717.
One of these is a pretty good bill. The other one, I think 717 can fly, but I think 718 is, as Senator Bowe would say, an idea that has not yet arrived.
On the proposed amendment on 717 and 916 of the Senate bill, after appeared in the recent effect of line 3917.
I'd be glad to if anybody else wants to, but it goes beyond the original thought and goes into liability and all sorts of other things. And then after the questions you raised at the time of the hearing, you've blown me off of it, I think. Your example of a deputy chief of police and shed or tangent or whatever. Okay. Oh, good. And you've convinced me, and I kind of think that maybe 18 is a little ahead of its time.
Someone moved the amendment.
Can I point out one thing on this? On sub 4, the amendment removed the language. And also, that's in 16, and line 17, you give him his jurisdiction, part of the contract, jurisdiction. I remember when this first testified, well, any warrant would be duly issued, and I would agree, that's down by the different point. But I wonder if we want to take out the reference to issues within his jurisdiction. And the way I would use the amendment, I could also do that. I wonder if it might be desirable to leave that in so he agreed it. But the chief officer holds in his hand a bench warrant or other warrant. Duly issued within his jurisdiction for the arrest of this person. Because sub 4 is referring to communication between counties or between states, and the basis for the receiving jurisdiction or the jurisdiction is notified to act is assurance oral communication or a letter perhaps that there is a warrant in another jurisdiction, and I think if you take that out, obviously it's going to come from some jurisdiction, but I don't think that that the jurisdiction is notifying the other one would have to have a warrant issued from their own jurisdiction in order to come within sub 4. And I just wonder if it might be more precise to
you repeat that language, John?
Well, and I don't think you're doing any filing to the
no, I think that's an
amendment, but let's see, the such chief officer holds in his hand a bench warrant or other warrant issued within his jurisdiction for the arrest of such person, period. Well, I took out the duly. I don't know the duly. I would leave in issue. I don't think you would add anything, but I think that the clause issued within his jurisdiction is important to the operation of the substance. In other words, to notify the peace officer doing the notifying is not talking about a warrant that he knows about from some other.
I agree. I think that's a good point.
The man was crossing several state lines. He has to go back to his jurisdiction to do the arresting officer.
Right. Or anyone that holds, wherever the there's a valid warrant, or wherever there's a warrant, you have to go to that agency. You couldn't just kind of pass along the line. You have to keep going back. It's not a hold. It's not a hold in due course. Okay.
Now we have type 2 officer holds in his a bench warrant or other warrant issued for the arrest of such person within the jurisdiction.
Well, that's quite what he
issued within the jurisdiction for the arrest of such person. All right.
Well, I'll move to the Paulette Amendment. Move it before due pass is amended. I'll move 18 to the back of the book. Pending.
Pending
18 and June. Pending the time, yes. When its idea comes, I'll bring it back out.
All favors say aye.
Aye.
I don't know if that's the whole
water or not, but the new language that's put in by the House is if he has had a preliminary examination and has been held to answer upon the charge before magistrate. Now, whether it would be construed as having had a preliminary examination if the defendant had waived it, I don't know. Is that discussed?
Didn't we have a constitutional amendment on the ballot that tailed on this matter in the last 15 years, down to the last 12 years? It just seems to me like just an old friend.
I think we did, but not that I recall it. I think we had testimony
the other day. Does the ACLU have a position on this one?
I believe, I'm not sure, but I'm not positive they're opposed to it. I don't remember the count. You know, I spoke against it on the floor over there. And I don't remember the vote on it. I don't remember the vote on it.
Well, if the people voted on it once before, first they made lots of mistakes, like they got that doggone bond or something. But I'd sure like to see it considered by the commission. The commission didn't touch on this at all, really.
This is from the Oregon City Bar. It's a criminal law committee bill, and apparently has support from some segment of the defense bar, because the state of Milbank, I recall, appeared before the committee and spoke in favor of this bill. And he spoke on behalf of the bar committee.
One of the arguments in favor of it is to speed up process, but it's actually the cost of giving up the grand jury. But, yeah.
Senator Brown moves HCR 12, Defense of Criminal Law Review Commission for Study. Any discussion? Madam Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator
Aye. Available, or the first, you know, to try all, You have to be in the book before you work.
You
only have to before you kind of rest it, and then sit around and wait to see if whether or not it's going to go tonight, and then you can do a farm and let that thing be done very, you get an answer on it within 30 days. Well, I just as simple as those, it looks like.
Yeah, I think it's good.
See, we've already voted out the idea to tie them up longer than, what is it, 60 days without trial?
Just kind of address itself the other side, you're going to have to indict them. Within 30 days after the arrest.
The complimentary bills, did you say, Don?
Yes, sir.
Why is it fully in the
stand? I don't know of any opposition. I don't know if the district attorney is going to do it. Practical fact of it is that if you overlook somebody, you don't get them indicted within 30 days. You can argue with them, you just have to read the letter. Start over.
I don't have my problem with 1331 before it is passed by the motion. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye. 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 The court's a lot more efficient. We're going to bring a lot of people out of it.
I think when you say that one.
I don't know if anybody is less well equipped to do it, if that's what you want out of it.
Well,
somebody right there.
You haven't backed up the meeting, you just
equipped. Two rides make a wrong, yeah.
Okay.
You let me out something like that, John.
1369.
John. When our friend Hanneman testified on this, he said, he talked about turn lights and tail lights on a boat. And somewhere or another, that just didn't seem like quite a real serious problem. Wasn't that one? That was the inspiration for the bill. Didn't you say that?
I didn't know that.
I didn't mention that. I think what the inspiration really was.
Well, that's the thrust that I got. I pull a boat, and I think I know something about the problem, but I don't think there's any people that this would have enough to check the driver's license or anything else.
Turn
about and
move the table. 1359.
Why don't we just refer that? Excuse me. That's not the table,
is it?
Action on 1349.
All favor say aye. 1420. huddled up, too. I helped fumble there on that.
1654. Qualification.
Well, I move this not be passed with the rejected written word of the speaker.
This is like moving 1654 to the board of the past for the change of section. First call the rule.
How are you going to work in with the regret that it isn't?
I'll move it on the floor. Okay.
Well, this just depends on the resolution.
I think that's important to find out. Probably in rules and resolutions. But I think we ought to follow that up. Okay, now we can touch all of those too. Now we'll take off and move out.
Now this bill,
better law than present law? Mars came in, and I think, isn't this an us bill, Mr. Judge Ellis? Is this Judge Ellis? Mars came in, and Tony worked him over a little bit, if I recall correctly.
And
This is the one that I think John or Francis
spoke to you.
Yeah,
what were you talking about when we worked on last year? What was? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we spent a heck of a lot of time last session on putting that in. In fact, we spent time in 67, as a matter of fact, and lost it in 67, and got it in 69. Well, Mr. Chairman, I talked to Jim Ellis, I think, on this matter when he was last here, and he still thinks it's a good bill, and he tries to draw a distinction between why this is needed, but I'm, for the life of me, I can't follow him in it, and I agree with, but it's the key thematic to the question of when somebody is under custody or arrest or whatever it is the key to the whole criminal procedure, and particularly on the, when you put in the Miranda warnings and all the rest of them, they're keyed into when he's taking the custody or arrest, it's really a difficult problem. How do you feel about it, Harold? Do you see anything on there?
Did it start, won't it? There you go.
I left the room, not in the world, it's really
Well, the direction is to give a man a ticket and expect him to show up, most of them do. Is this to be violent for that or make it easier? It looks like there is a language says it. It makes the citation easier to use, right?
Well, it's a point of law that I have absolutely nothing about.
Well, I think the problem basically is Marr was convinced that taking into custody meant taking the guy by the hand and, or the putting cuffs on him or to come along, taking him down to the, bring him down and booking him. And I don't think that's what taking into custody means. Isn't that where the argument is, Don? And
yes, I think so. And, I don't know. When you read the other statutes that I pointed out, I really don't see what you change by substituting the word arrest for custody. Look at 1003. If you pass this bill out, subject to amendments that Donald requested to turn the code, but Don has said it is, and he can see no reason for the amendment. So the delayed action on the thing for a while.
Where are the amendments?
He never came up with them, because Don has never prepared them, because he, after studying it, didn't see any reason for them.
Yeah. Or you take over.
No, here's the reason. Now, 138 takes over, it would be amended by this bill. It's strictly related to appeals by the state. Now, the amendment that we made was to make it possible to have an appeal from the municipal justice or district court to the circuit court and add a section to it. Well, present law already covers appeals from district courts, which might be amended, but it was under Senate Bill 450, depending on what happens to that bill.
But either if Senate Bill 450 passes, you still have an appeal procedure on questions of law that the state can appeal on, if they can now, from district court to circuit court. ORS 157070 covers appeals from justice court. ORS 221350 to 380 provides for appeals from municipal court. So that was the reason I came to the conclusion that it wasn't necessary to amend this section with the dealing with appeals to the Court of Appeals to cover these other matters. It seems to me they're already covered in the law. Because the state, in any event, can't appeal the conviction, appeal the question of law, can't relitigate the merits of the case. And I was not there at the meeting, Mr. Lamb, but the way I understood the amendment, would be to put something into this bill that's already handled elsewhere in the law.
I think if I understood the United Times, I thought that this amendment, the amendment you wanted me to look into, would do what you say the law already does. So, right?
Well, that's my opinion.
Well, can I restate it? That if not, in no other way of looking at it, this is the wrong place to put appeals for Muni and JP and district, because that's not the district court statute. Is that?
Well, that's another argument.
Yeah, but if we want to put it, we'd have to go back into each one of their statutes and not add it somewhere under 138060.
And that's precisely what we've done. For example, in Senate Bill 450, we deal with appeals from district court, either by the state or by the defendant, to the circuit court. And the other statutes I mentioned cover respectively appeals from either justice court or municipal court. So,
this has already passed out. It was to be amended. Now it needs to be noted that we can support this proposed amendment.
How did Tony vote on it? Did Tony hear when this came out?
Yes.
Speaking of turkeys, Mr. Chairman, could we go back to 207 sometime?
207, yes.
That's the little bill that Senator Outerkirk raised some objection to. Senator Burns agrees with Senator Outerkirk. Worthy Counsel Paulette and Senator Carson disagree with those two, but if you look at line 27 and 28 of Senate Bill 207, what they objected to was the fact that, if you recall the, I flatter myself to say debate, the discussion on the floor, was the inclusion of subsection 3 of 483602, and if you turn to the front of your bill, you'll see Don's photocopy of the statute. And if you look right down at the bottom, is to paragraph 3, which deals with witnesses. Now, the interesting thing here is that by picking up Senator Adesert's support by deleting witnesses, which really shouldn't have been included, we lose Senator Halleck, who wanted to make this a Good Samaritan bill. But that's the way, because he stumbled. My motion would be to, on line 27, delete the S on subsection, make it a subsection, and then on line 28, delete the and parens 3. The effect of it is, the bill would then read, the failure to stop and perform the duties required by subsection 2 of ORS 483602 of a driver, and of course Don and I agree that driver does not apply to witness, but that's what Senator Adesert thought it did, so to clean the statute up, we just eliminate paragraph 3, and we say that you can have your license suspended if you fail to stop performing the duties required by subsection 2, which is the duty of the driver, after an accident which results in injury or death to persons and so on and so forth. And I think, Don, does that not, in your opinion, remove any slight ambiguity?
Yeah, it's whether or not it applies to the
witness. Well, apparently there's an old war that's been bubbling on the duties of witnesses that this bill kind of stumbled into, and the lines are pretty well drawn on it. But you recall it passed substantially, 20 votes or something.
And there's a question
while
you're
Well, if we're all reasonably satisfied that the bill is in good shape now, and I refer you, my understanding, Don, and check me on it, is the other amendment we make is on line 10 and page 3, and that is we add in here subsection 3 of ORS 602, that's the witness statute, and the other statutes come in and they're punishable in these, according to here, but that doesn't include them on making them a suspense or license suspension item. And then that's the only place that subsection 3 is mentioned. Okay. And the effect of the reason of it is, as you'll see on line 9, the present law says 43602 to 43612, and we've had to peel out really subsection 2 out of that, so that leaves subsection 3, and well, I better quit while I'm ahead. I'll move it out. I'll move the amendment.
Move
the floor to pass as. Right behind it? I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong one too, Betty. That would be still line 27, removing the S, and on line 28, the and in paren 3. So it reads, failure to stop and perform the duties required by subsection 2 of ORS 483602.
Aye.
Well, Dan, should we, after the fact, do we intentionally exclude one, paragraph one? Do we want to exclude?
Picked up fraud in an indirect, but I think, because the duties required by subsection 2 and 3, subsection 1 says he has to stop until he complies with the requirements of subsection 2.
Okay, well, there is no penalty for violating subsection 1 there. But subsection 1, really, to comply with subsection 1, you've got to comply with subsection 2. Okay. About the colony and Carson, we're going to try to get Tony and John together.
Oh.
And let's get John, which I doubt that I don't think they're ready for that this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Actually,
do you have anything to bring up?
Well, I just wondered about this old folks thing. I don't know. Maybe it's the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals takes care of these things. But, I just like to be sure if Don or some of these bird dogs in this, that we don't ignore this. What was the number of the other two?
211.
211.
It takes everything but neglect, I suppose, to take care of the Senator Ford.
We don't cover the negative of the but.
I don't know how often this can be used. I'm sure that there's many people around this world and many different times that there's bound to be abuses. And whether this would be something that would really be effective or not, I have no idea. But I'm sure in nursing home people would be against it, not because they want to hurt people, but because it just seems maybe it hurts.
Well,
the response has never appeared before us on this issue.
No. In fact, we've never had it yet.
We studied a little bit, thought Senator Bill 40 took care of the major portion of it. Well, we still have.
You got 15 down there,
right? Four there, except for the negligence.
Except for the negligence part of it.
And willful or anything like that, what I take care of.
You mean that the 40 doesn't cover criminal negligence?
Not in this context.
Not in this context.
we have some statutes section 7040 that cover criminal negligence, not to the degree, not the way it is in the UCL.
You're in a hard to pass it still.
But this, when you cut down to it, why have an agent at all?
Well, I think it's a fair question, accepting that these particular people are kind of like juveniles. They're just not quite their own boss. You might as well be in jail as be in a nursing home. Really.
Yeah, but if you're in the hospital and you're seeking treatment willfully, I feel that even if you're 35 years old in the prime of life, just elected to the, just appointed to the Oregon Senate, if you're in.
You passed the crime right after that.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry to hear
that. I mean, I don't see the reason for picking something out in this area.
Well, I'm just guessing that folks have seen the beauty and you think it's dealing about it. And not only that, but you're dealing about it. That's a problem.
We'll figure out some other
time.